So vielen Dank. Thank you for this invitation, and I apologize for not speaking in German. Ich spreche ein bisschen Deutsch, aber um verständlich zu sein, glaube ich, dass es besser ist, als wenn ich auf Englisch spreche. Also, ich habe einen Chronometer gesetzt, deswegen verschaffen wir das in 20 Minuten. So, what I'm going to talk to you about, but the good is that I speak English with an Italian accent, so that's the better part. So, okay, my outline is this. I'm going to talk, here's the laser, about things such as graphemes and allographs that have been touched upon today. And generally, I will touch upon the issue of interoperability. I will ask myself how we can make our digital scroll editions based on diplomatic transcriptions more interoperable. And my answer for this is that we can make our editions and transcriptions more interoperable, talk to each other better, if we work on digital modeling. And I'm working on an ontology, which is a formalizierung, a digital formalizierung of a digital model, of concepts such as graphemes, allographs, tokens, graphs, abbreviations, ligatures, etc. I will only discuss about those two issues because of the time limits, obviously. And I will end with a practical sort of demonstration, example, in fact, of how modeling the distinction between grapheme and allograph based on semiotics, for example, can make my digital scroll edition more interoperable. What's the deal about interoperability? Imagine you have an early book from the 15th century. Venenum is Latin for poison. It's written like this. I make a diplomatic transcription in which I transcribe it like this. Or I run an OCR software, or handwritten text transcription software, that yields a diplomatic transcription with the specific, you know, way to write this on the book. I need diplomatic transcription for historical documentation, visualization, and for some processing that we have been discussing today. But the issue is that, imagine this is a witness of a work that has many witnesses. So witness A, witness B. And the word is spelled in different ways in the two diplomatic transcriptions. What I mean by interoperability is that if you want to process it, for example, for collation, the software, a simple software, won't handle it. This is what Patrick Zahler said earlier, that we are still at the basis of text representation. We're mostly talking about text. So for example, if I perform a search, the search won't work here. I perform an automatic collation. Even today, collation softwares work on plain text. If I do natural language processing, it won't recognize this one. If I try and do statistics, such as distant reading, I will have issues. So this transcription and this transcription don't talk to each other easily. I need modeling to make them, and software based on good modeling, to make them talk to each other, for instance, for collation. Just to make one example. This full disclaimer, my focus is on European medieval handwriting, but also early print, because early print imitates handwriting, and we have a lot of issues, such as abbreviations, etc., also in early print. Okay, current solutions to the interoperability issue are quite simplistic sometimes. TI recommends that we use Unicode. TI says, if you use Unicode, your transcription will be interoperable. However, this is a solution for new digital text produced today, but not enough for pre-modern writing systems. I'll only make one example, allographs. If I transcribe the long S and the short S with the corresponding Unicode character, I am being Unicode compliant, right? However, have I told the computer, basically, that they correspond to each other, that they are variants of grapheme S? No, I haven't. For the computer, there are two different characters. So if I try and do collation, per se, it will yield a variant. But it's only an allographic variant, orthographic variant, no substantial variant. So what do people in the digital humanities do? Project-specific solutions that we do at home a lot. That's not a photo from mine, but it could be. Disposable homemade solutions. Everybody finds normalization software and strategies, but it's hardly ever documented or based on complex and shared modeling. So TI is theory agnostics and leaves us alone, thanks God. But there's still more work to do. So my idea is that Unicode and TI are tools. They're not the solution. Okay. I think that the interoperability can be best achieved, or we can walk towards interoperability through modeling. What's wanted is a scholarly discussion on modeling, and here we are today,
documenting project-specific modeling and normalization practices in English prose or German prose, hardly Italian prose, nobody speaks Italian, except for everyone here, I found it. You have to talk to me in German, I won't learn German. Don't speak Italian to me. Shared models will arise from scholarly discussion. I'm also very pluralistic, but I think that if we discuss, we can find some common ground on some concepts. And from here, reusable software libraries will arise. Not like many people in digital humanities think that we have to start from easy tools. Tools arise from shared models, in my view. Okay, an ontology. This is my project at the Venice Center for Digital and Public Humanities, directed by Patrick Zahle. From Franz Fischer. Franz Fischer, not Patrick Zahle. Yeah, that was a nice laugh. Okay. So this is what the ontology should look like. It's a way to formalize, in a way that the computer can understand and process, the modeling of concepts such as grapheme, allograph, different types of graphemes, alpha beams, lemmas, tokens. Obviously, I only have 20 minutes, and I spend most of them with jokes that are not very funny, so I will just limit myself. Well, this is a part of the differentiation between graphemes, but today, I will only confine myself to the grapheme-allograph distinction. Graphemes, allographs. What's this distinction based about? Is that an easy distinction or not? Imagine we have this manuscript. Comparatur bel ad se, bel ad alium. He is compared to himself or to another. Comparatur bel ad se, bel ad alium. Okay, it doesn't matter what it says. When describe is writing, he has a toolbox of possible, copyright Patrick Zahle, a toolbox of possible graphs he can choose within, all right, on this axis. You can switch between those glyphs and change a U with a Y. But he also has another paradigm of possible signs for different forms of T. Comparatur, three different ways of writing T. What's the difference between this paradigm and this paradigm? That if you switch a U with a Y, bel, yel, the denotative meaning of the word changes. Fame, came. If you switch one form of T with another form of T, the denotative meaning of the word doesn't change. It's still comparatur. So I think this is quite solid theoretical ground, and not very theoretical, quite solid ground upon which we can make a distinction between graphemes and allographs. I call graphemes a set of glyphs, a set of signs, a set of entities, such that if you switch between them, you have a change in denotative meaning. And allographs, those such that. If you switch between them, you have no change in denotative meaning. I'm using those two red terms coming from Louis Trolley Hemslow, so structural linguistics. This is rather semiotic than linguistics, in fact. But I think that we should hang to linguistics if we want to distinguish between graphemes and allographs. In digital humanities terms, you can easily have a TEI transcription, for example, and a table, a simple database table or a CSV table that the computer can process. This table informs the computer that this Unicode code point, this Unicode character, and this Unicode character are allographs corresponding to one concept, one grapheme that I identify with this Unicode character. So what do I include at that point in my transcription? Allographs or graphemes? These or this? It doesn't matter. It's not for me to decide. Each project, thanks God, has the freedom to encode what the project wants based on their scientific interests and time and money. So you can choose to encode allographs, graphetic differences, graphemic differences, hyper-normalized stuff, as long as I suggest that we frame it in a larger theoretical model, as long as everything finds its place in a specific model. That shouldn't be my model. My idea is that if you say what you are transcribing and have some theoretical framework based on common concepts, such as denotative meaning or others, to call things with their name, this is more interoperable. And I will talk about this in a minute. But there's another interesting aspect about allograph that I hadn't realized until I dug into this. Allographs are not that easy. That distinction is easy, the way I put it. Graphemes, allographs. But can allographs have a distinctive value? If I write T 100 times, I will write 100 different T's, slightly different. This is also true about print if you look with a microscope. So theoretically, every single sign is an allograph, is a different sign. However, I say that there are only three allographs. I can distinguish between graphemes based on whether they change or not the meaning of the word, the denotative meaning of the word. But how or based on what can I distinguish between three and only three different allographs? So how can I define allographs? That's the question I started from. First off, not all allographs are that banal. Capitals are a typical example of allographs. If you go to Wikipedia, look for allographs, the example is uppercase, lowercase. However, I have examples in which it makes a difference. Cool is a city in California. Cool is a cool town. Smith is a good Smith. Odd, which is a file format. Odd files are odd files. This is a geographical noun, and this is an adjective. So it does make a difference on the linguistic level. Can we still call them allographs? That only applies to contemporary writing systems. In manuscripts, they're just allographs. So that's interesting. I mean, if we say, like people normally say, like Raoul Mordenti, that lowercase and uppercase D are allographs, then obviously they refer to the same grapheme. But if we think that they are graphemes, because they do make a linguistic difference, a denotative meaning difference, they differentiate between words, then what's above them? What's D? If I'm not wrong, Friederike Neuber calls this an archigrapheme, archigrapheme auf Deutsch. That's interesting to me because I had came up independently with another concept that I call alpha beam, alphabetic letter. So two different graphemes meaning the same alphabetic letter, which can be useful for medieval abbreviations, though I wouldn't touch upon, for God's sake. That's a whole different complicated story. Now, here is a couple of sentence segmentation. No, I won't make it. I will skip this. I won't skip this. I was just saying that. Even just shortly, that in manuscripts, because it's a pity, in medieval manuscripts, capitals can differentiate between sentences. I go because I have to stay here. I go because I have to stay here, which doesn't make any sense, but it has a different meaning. All right, so if it does make a difference in the meaning of the whole sense, then it does have some distinctive value, even in the manuscripts. We use punctuation for this, but even medieval manuscripts use larger initials to segment the text. But even the most classical of allographs, long S, short S. Short S is only found at the end of the word, okay? So it is a boundary between words. Paulus sustinet me, Paulo holds me up. Paulus sus, Paulo the pig, tinet me, holds me. Oh, we have two different signs here, space and the positional allograph, that make a difference in the meaning of the whole text, but they do make a difference. So can we still call them allographs, or allographs do have some distinctive meaning? And that's what I meant by the whole thing. That's funny. I can't make a German accent in English, and that would be stupid, so I just say, who are you? I don't understand Gothic, but I think he's asking who we are. So this who and this who are made by the same sequence of graphemes, right? They have the same denotative meaning. However, there is a difference in the font. The font is meaningful. For the author, it is meaningful for those who produced the text. Connotator, in Hemslow's text, in Hemslow's terminology, this is a connotator, Gothic versus Gaul. So this is pertinent. This is a pertinent distinction. Connotators can be italics for emphasis, or even, again, capitals for respect. The evangelist is the evangelist, but if I'm Christian, then he is the evangelist, so it's capital. And even non-pertinent allographs, such as positional allographs, make have some meaning to someone. Example, this is T, T-U. This form of T is only found before U. This form of T is found after A. So it's a positional allograph, like positional allophones. So this is non-pertinent for the reader. The medieval scribe in the 9th century, for him, this didn't make any difference. But it can make differences for us. For scholars, like we saw earlier, Professor Hofmeister, Vintao. Well, I should limit myself to English, really. Even surnames are hard for me. We saw that for me, that difference matters. So it becomes pertinent in saussure terms for some readers. So what does this practically mean? That I want to create an edition in which I transcribe those allographs because they are pertinent to me, in a way. So, distinctive value or pertinence of allographs. Graphemes, I still think that there is a difference between three categories. One is the graphemes that change the denotative meaning, fame versus name. Hemslow calls this denotative semiotics. Allographs can have other forms of distinctive value, saussure pertinence. For the writer, such as connotators, and that's one category, or for the reader, the digital editor. So what do I include in my edition? I can state that I only include graphemes, and that's a graphematic transcription. I include allographs which have some distinctive value for the writer based on my scientific interests. Or I include pretty much what I want because some differences make sense to me. Digital editors can set their own pertinence criteria. And pertinence criteria become transcription criteria. I include in my transcription something because it has a distinctive value, it has pertinence for my, as a reader perspective. You see the difference? Here we are in structural semiotics. What's important is the system, the writer's intention, so to speak. Chomsky, if you will. Here we are in reception studies. What's important for the reader? In practice, just one example, I have 3 minutes and 20 seconds, so I'm making this. In practice, how can grapheme allograph modeling, for example, that's just one of many examples, make my DSE more interoperable? Imagine I have two witnesses, A and B. One I transcribe with OCR. The other one I transcribe with manual transcription, selective. So I only choose some allographs, some graphemes that I want to represent. Unter dem Schloss. This is an allographic transcription that comes automatically from OCR, for example. The computer doesn't know that this is an allograph for U, so it represents it as B, with the B shape. In red, I have allographs. Please consider that allographs can be represented by Unicode characters or by markup. In this case, italics are represented with markup, but notionally, there's no difference between the choice of a Unicode character or markup. They're just digital ways to represent information. If this is important for the reasons we just said, historical documentation and specific processing. But if I add this kind of tables to my project, so imagine my project has a TI XML file for this, a TI XML file for that, and I add a CSV table such as this for each transcription based on that kind of modeling, based on that kind of distinction between graphemes and allographs, then the computer can automatically produce a graphematic transcription. Because the computer knows, for example, that long S and short S, those two Unicode characters, long S and short S, belong to the same grapheme S. And by the way, those characters don't have to look like the original glyphs. They are just mimetic. They're just symbolic. They're arbitrary signs. Anyway, this transcription is produced automatically, and this is more interoperable. In many cases, such as in most cases of early modern books, this will be enough to achieve a good degree of interoperability. I will conclude with one slide on open issues. There are a lot of things I didn't talk about, such as, God forbid, abbreviations. But another thing is alternative spelling. Wife in Middle English. I and Y are no allographs, they are graphemes. They can differentiate between words, right? However, in this case, they don't. They don't differentiate. Here we have a graphematic transcription, graphemes, and here we have another graphematic transcription, but they correspond to each other. Even worse with abbreviations that are everywhere in manuscripts and early modern books, especially in manuscripts, medieval manuscripts. Unta and unta. These are graphemes. This is another sequence of graphemes, but they both mean the same word. So the graphematic distinction is not interoperable enough. So my conclusion is that we need a third layer, at least a third layer. Layers are infinite potentially, obviously, and it's up to the modeling of the addition. However, we need at least another layer of transcription, which I call linguistic normalized, in which I say that unta, those graphemes, and unta, those graphemes, are the same word. And that's where the real interoperability is. For example, collation will say that there is no alter, there is no variant here. So to wrap up, I focused on the issue of interoperability, and I argued that the way towards interoperability, which is not a goal that we can achieve once for all, but a way to go towards interoperability in digital scholarly editions is through digital modeling. And I made the example of the agraphemes, allographs distinction, and made some examples about whether we can consider allographs, actual allographs, and I showed a little example. I'm looking forward for your feedback. Thank you very much for your attention.